Hey guys, it's Tracy with the hashtag Fish Life podcast. Welcome back. Tonight is a little bit different. Tonight is still going on the topic of June, where we're talking about music and the music that kind of molded us as we grew up. But tonight I actually have a guest. This is the first of two this month, so it's kind of a cool thing. Be prepared because this podcast will probably be full of laughter and memories and might take a little bit longer than I'm used to doing. So hang tight. Now's a good time to get a drink, grab a sandwich, and go to the bathroom before we start. tonight I have Adrian with me. Adrian, hello.
Hi.
So Adrian and I have known each other for 20 something years, close. Yeah. Very close, actually.
I think it was like 3 years, actually.
Yeah, yeah, it's only been three. Mm-hmm. No, mm-hmm. Yeah, we were 3 years old.
Yes, yeah. That's okay. How that works. Mm-hmm.
So we are, because our friendship started in our early-ish 20s, mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. We figured it would be appropriate to talk about the music during that time frame of our lives. So, for you, did you have any specific artists that you really clung to, or an album that you were really, on top of during that time frame?
Well, I think that what was happening is music was changing a lot then, mm-hmm. and I felt the need to kind of break out of the alternative genre I had engulfed myself in.
Which was
more along the lines of, the typical stuff. I was like, I still really loved Nirvana, and I was still loving, like, Soundgarden and gotcha. Things like that.
So, like, late 90s,
yes.
mid-90s rock
I hung
kind of
on
stuff.
Right there because I really enjoyed it, and it was a pivotal point in my life, so I felt like the new music that was coming out, other than hip-hop,
right.
not R&B, because I right. wasn't understanding that yet,
right.
Was kind of crap. So I wasn't clinging to pop, and so I just kind of hung out there for quite some time. And then this moment happened in music when hip-hop went from something I couldn't relate to something that was moving me, and that
gotcha.
Was pretty cool.
All right, so thinking about that, thinking about something that moved you, give me an example.
Well, Nas. Nas was the first time I had a love of hip-hop. Well, that and Wu-Tang, because okay. Wu-Tang was a little bit earlier and
right.
Went through. But
right.
Wu-Tang for me and Nas were a change because it moved me in a way. It made me understand a part of me that I didn't know was there. So, like, it kind of helped me let loose a little bit, mm-hmm. and it let me understand that I didn't have to be in a box when it came to music.
Right. Do you think that because Nas and Wu-Tang are actually more lyrical storytellers, and not just the, I was out on the streets, I was doing this, right. it's very much, my father wasn't there, mm-hmm. and, I'm in love with this girl. Do you think that that really kind of spoke to you that way, because it was more an in-depth backstory?
Now that you say that, I see what you mean, and I would probably agree with you now. At the time, I think I was more hung up on, other than understanding a new lifestyle, generally, right. it was the technicality in the music, because my background is in opera, so
right.
I was able to hear what Wu and Nas were doing technically to
musically,
their music.
Yeah.
And what was happening is using their mouth as percussion and not beatboxing, but using it within the rap
right.
itself
right.
was like arm hair sticking up, and like I'm discovering a new land of music. So that was probably what opened me up and connected me emotionally, because I felt like they were doing something really new, mm-hmm. and I felt part of that. So
cool.
That was cool.
So you were like the 37th chamber.
I was. I am.
I
still.
Am. It's still a thing.
I think I'm the 40th chamber.
I think I touched, I believe last week, on the fact that, like, for me with Arrested Development, I wasn't having the same plight as my African-American peers,
no.
but I was able to grab on to the fact that it was okay to feel this way. It was okay to have, at least emotionally speaking for me,
mm-hmm.
it was okay to feel that way. And I think for me, I really was also at a point where I had my standards that I loved,
right.
but I'd always been hip-hop. I'd always mm-hmm. been R&B. And I wasn't, at that point, I was actually breaking into Bare Naked Ladies, and I was breaking into kind of that more college rock
right.
that I wasn't really interested in at all. It mm-hmm. didn't mean anything to me. And see, I was on the opposite. I didn't really like Nirvana.
Mm.
I didn't really like Foo Fighters. And I love Foo Fighters now.
Mm-hmm.
I've grown with it, and I understand it more. But, I was getting into, I really like Busta, and I still had my standards, but coming in and hearing, Bare Naked Ladies 1 week, and mm-hmm. then kind of like listening to the lyrics and hearing that they were kind of rapping.
Kind of,
because
yes.
they really are doing that same, mm-hmm. that same kind of treatment to the lyrics, that it was an eye-opener for me in the fact that I didn't have to stay in this niche, but other people were playing with it too.
Right.
And then when we kind of had this join of hip-hop and R&B, where we, especially with like when Puff came on the scene, you can't deny the fact that he was like this instrumental sewing machine where he took R&B and he took rap and he just merged them together. And then we had Faith Evans. Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. And they did, you know, they took The Police's Every Breath You Take and they put it into the tribute to Big, and, you know, but we had Faith Evans. Mm-hmm. But then on the same record album, we had Lil' Kim, and we had Foxy Brown, and we had, you know, all these different women that were pulling down.
Yeah, and that's a big deal, too. Like, to hear female rappers and at that time in my life was once again pivotal, because what that did is made, you know, this Irish Catholic suburban girl feel okay about talking about sex in a way that was empowering and not, like, you know, degrading.
Right.
Because, let's be honest, Woo, Nas, Biggie,
it's
them.
All bitches and hoes.
It is. And granted, that's not okay now. But it is, it was what it was at the time. Doesn't make it right. It just was.
Right.
But we also had these women who were kind of counterbalancing a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, there were some lines on Lil' Kim that I could quote right now, but let's not do that. That to this day, I'm just like, man, it still blows me away.
Right.
It still blows me away. So yeah, having the women come on the scene and bring that together. And then you had, like, Maya. Mm-hmm. Maya was a lot of fun, too, but she could rap as well.
Yeah.
Aaliyah.
We can't not talk about Aaliyah.
Right, of course. But, you know, that was pivotal. In sewing those genres together. But your point is that we're looking at everything changing. And so what was it for you that was like, you know what, this is a big deal. This is a big deal in music right now.
I think aside, like, Bare Naked Ladies, I'm a huge fan of them. That's, like, one of my bucket list concerts to go to, because I know they're very fun.
Mm-hmm.
Quite honestly, I hung on to Nerdcore before it was actually labeled Nerdcore.
Right.
There were a couple of bands that I had seen there. Two Skinny J's. I would even qualify Bloodhound Gang as part of that, because they're smart lyrics, and they, you know, Two Skinny is kind of more, like, verbal assassinating. And Bloodhound is just kind of like boobies. I mean, one of the entire albums is called Hooray for Boobies, and the disc is literally a breast with a nipple. But I think I was also kind of getting in touch with, and I know you'll relate to this, my Fiona Apple side.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
But and see, I was kicking that years before with Tori.
Tori Amos, yeah.
I'm putting the shout out, because if she ever hears this podcast, I want her to understand that, yes,
how much I love you.
I love you.
Right.
Okay,
sorry. And to fast forward, then we got Regina Spektor from that.
Woof!
So,
did we ever.
So we really got a lot out of that. But I think I was still, and let's talk old here, I was still a member of BMG Music Club.
Hey, listen, I stole thousands of tapes from them. Thank you very much.
I got my Prince double disc from them, my Parliament. Yeah, everything.
Oh, Parliament.
But, you know, there were artists that even now I think really would have played well in the 90s, the late 90s, early 2000s. Jem, Lily Allen, they would have really come out of that girl rock thing. But for me, the big transition was moving into music that I saw on MTV2.
Okay. Fair enough. Because
it was a big deal.
It's hard to have the exposure when you're younger.
Right.
And live where we live. It's, you know, we're not in the middle of LA or New York.
So. No. But I think for me too, college was a big deal. Being on a campus and kind of surrounding myself with all these different tastes. I was then introduced to Eminem and Kid Rock and
I'm sorry to hear that.
I know. And Head PE and, you know, Disturbed and just kind of all this heavier stuff that I really didn't care to hear and didn't care to put on, but it was somehow in my ear tubes, you know, it was kind of there.
Right.
You'd hear it down the hall, but then the next thing would be Brass Monkey.
Right.
And then, you know, you'd merge into something else. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there was really not one set genre when I was in college that, like, I was still just hovering over. Ska. I was introduced to ska at that point, and I just adore some ska. Reggae. I really got into reggae. I mean, I kind of really just branched out all over the place when it came to music in my late teens.
Okay.
Just because I'd been so... I mean, I wore the boxers underneath my jeans when my pants sagged. Right? And I wore the backwards hat and I wore the big sweatshirts, and like I was in that moment.
But
and
you were also at a, you know, performing arts school,
right,
and you were with a lot of kids who were very talented and came from a different upbringing than you.
Right.
A different socioeconomic class even at times. So I have.
Go ahead.
I was thinking about when you were talking about some of the new music that was happening. It sparked a memory for me. I still listen to this band, or a version of this band? You'll understand it now. Probably once a week is Tool. Tool was
never anything for me.
Oh my God!
And I'm finding out that I may have been wrong.
I'm going to go ahead and say it, yeah. Maynard. You heard it here. that was such a huge change in what was happening in rock then. And I heard somebody about a year ago make this comment. They said, now I'm forgetting the name of the band that I hate, that my husband loves. I'm blanking out. But that Tool was like, what is that band that I hate from Canada? The rock band from the 80s. Who are they, Tracy?
Oh my God, I didn't listen to rock.
Oh. It's going to make me crazy. Oh my God. Rush.
Okay.
No Rush for me. Thank you very much. Burn. But somebody said, you know, Tool is like Rush to them, where it's just a pivotal.
Right.
I've said pivotal a lot tonight.
It's this experience that really hatched, you know, more. I mean, I dated a guy in college that all he listened to was 70s rock, and it was like Foghat and like Zeppelin and like all this stuff. And I didn't understand it.
Right.
It was not my thing. It was not my wheelhouse.
It didn't move you.
No.
Okay.
And I think that's really important to note, too, is with music, we are either moved or we move on. And there's really no two ways about it. You don't just kind of like something.
Right.
You know, it's not just, it's like, Clutch. You don't just kind of like Clutch. Right, you either love Clutch or you hate them.
Yeah.
There's no, like, middle ground with Clutch.
Or like Cake.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, see, and I love Cake.
I hate Cake.
I know, see? See, and, you know, I remember a DJ saying, hey, we have new Cake. I mean, it could be new Cake. It just sounds like old Cake. I love Cake because everything is so predictable. I actually heard a version of Menomina done by Cake the other day on the B-sides. It was great.
Oh,
of course, but, you know, I don't always Menomina, but when I do. So, that's fun.
People hate us.
We actually got out my cassettes before we started recording, and we came across Prodigy.
Ooh.
And I'm a huge fan of Prodigy. It's actually one of my stations on Pandora.
Okay.
Because I enjoy it so much, and I like that kind of hackers circa 1994 feel.
Yeah.
But I like the fast movement, and I like the pace that goes with it.
Uh-huh.
Do you have something that, like, you look at it, and you're instantly, like, your whole body just electrifies, or does it still go back to Woo?
I would say hip-hop-wise, it goes back to Woo, but Tori Amos will always be that. Okay. That and, you know, Fiona Apple.
Yeah.
Those are the two that no matter what happens, like, I can listen to their first album or the, you know, the last song of their last and still be moved. But I have to make a note, I did see Prodigy at Woodstock 99.
Nice.
Because, you know, that went real well.
Yeah.
But that was an amazing rave that they threw that night. And there was, if I had not taken as many recreational...
habit-forming issues.
Sure. That evening, maybe I would remember more of the people that were there. But I do remember Prodigy because he was headlining. So it was like... whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
And that was electrifying. And that was also what was happening in music, too, that we weren't maybe accustomed to outside of that kind of scene. Because that was a very scene thing.
It was. It was very British, or at least UK. And it was very, very hush-hush over here. It was kind of like when punk came over.
Yeah.
People weren't talking about it. Oh, those people that listen to that, they're trouble. They're
messed up.
But I think that... you know, that also is a great segue into, we were getting more concerts. We were getting more multi-band venues. Like when we're talking about Smoking Grooves Tour, which would be amazing if they could bring something like that back. But I mean, I know that one of the articles here in the Enquirer said, oh, the Smoking Grooves Tour comes next week. And I bet you can't wait to see how many different plants grow afterwards. but I mean, you know, we had Smoking Grooves, we had Lilith Fair, we had Woodstock 99, we had Lollapalooza, we had the Vans Tour, which still goes on, but is it really worth it?
No.
But, you know, we have all these different multi-band, multi-stage shows now, and I think that really kicked off again in the late 90s and the early 2000s, we had all these record labels that were trying to push 7,000 of the same kind of artists on us, and they just needed a platform to showcase them.
Yeah. And then we weeded them out.
It
was a natural, organic occurrence.
Yeah.
And so you were able to go and say, hey, I found this great band, like Liz Phair.
Yeah.
We know, seeing her for the first time was like, oh, holy crap.
What is this?
Yeah. And she's on this tiny itty bitty stage at Lilith Fair. And I'm like, oh. And, you know, listen, I'm tired of the bullcrap with Lilith Fair. People make such a, you know, like, it's a joke. But guys, let's be honest. Alanis Morissette, you know, Sarah McLachlan, those broads were there and they were bringing it.
Yeah.
Because in the moment, that was a thing that was happening. And we really, I feel like the women were bringing something really powerful then. And then 9/11 happened.
Yeah.
And people wanted to be safe again. And that translated not just through our political system and our actions and things like that, but it also translated into our music. We weren't allowed, you couldn't be angry anymore about anything but that.
Right.
So
right.
that kind of squashed them.
And we kind of, in the mid-90s, we had that Riot Girl movement, which is where we got Tank Girl for from Hewlett and Martin. And she kind of ushered in this whole, okay, girls are in charge. And then we got Lilith Fair, and we got all these really heavy feminine rights kind of feel, which there's nothing wrong with that, but it was something that we hadn't seen since the 60s.
Right.
And it was just this recurrence to some of our parents that were like, oh, we've seen this, you know?
Right. And but to us, it was so refreshing. Right. I mean, think about Hole. When Hole came out, I was just like, who is this woman and how can I love her harder?
Right. Or L7.
And, exactly. So, you know, there were a lot of great female rockers out there and pianists and singer-songwriters that were happening. But, you know, we're seeing that again now. It's coming back around, and that's a tremendous thing. But what I'm also seeing happening now that I'm not loving is I don't love where hip-hop's going right now.
No, I agree.
I feel like it's just... I don't understand. And maybe that's because I'm older now.
Right.
God, are we turning the corner?
Are we too old? Are we going to turn it down?
Do we need to turn it down? I know it's pretty bad when I go to a bar and I go to like the jukebox and I'm like,
I don't know anybody on here.
I know Post Malone. Like, it's just getting bad.
That's it.
You know?
Yeah.
I just don't know what's happening.
But when Billy Ray Cyrus and whatever his name is can make a song about a horse and a road.
And, then, you know, and then Wranglers on their booty.
Sixth graders know, or six-year-olds know it.
Yes.
It's scary, but, you know.
It's scary.
Well, I remember nannying a little girl who is now in her 20s.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, pretty much.
Sorry.
I don't care. But she was singing Who Let the Dogs Out. And I remember her singing the line, a dog ain't nothing if he ain't got no bone. And I don't think I had heard that until she said it. So that meme that we always see about you never know how dirty a song is
until your
kid sings it is like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
You know? Hey.
Hello. We're outside if you can't tell.
I know that my brother, he's 7 years younger than me. So he was getting a lot of, what's her name? Was it Diana Lewis? The you've got the most stumbling blue eyes I've ever seen.
Oh yeah, yeah. The oh crap, what's her name?
Yeah,
you know.
But we had like Meredith Brooks, and we had Sean Colvin, and we had all these women that were getting this chance that the men had only seen.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at that point, because we had just had the Riot Girl movement in the late 90s, we were picking up on the, women deserve more.
Yeah.
You know, we need to be...
Or at least we have a voice now.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And it doesn't have to be parodied as like this whiny, you know, which
I'm
is...
hurt.
Right. Yeah. And you know, you broke up with me. You know, it's not that.
Girl,
it's not,
get over you type
right.
of deal. Yeah.
It wasn't, it's my party and I'll cry if I want to.
Right.
It was, it's my party, now get the hell out.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
You know? And I
or
think...
who invited you.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
There's really, no one here lives, no one by that name lives here.
I like it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, never
That's
heard
my
that.
Revenge song. Yeah. But I think that turning the corner at that point really coincides with us kind of maturing as well, because I was thinking about that on my drive today, is that, you know, you're 16 17, I'm still a kid but I want to be an adult,
right.
And you know, you're fighting with your mom and dad, or you're fighting with whoever's raising you, and you're constantly asking for the respect that you think you deserve,
freedom
at the same right, and the freedom, and at the same time while doling out no kind of respect to anybody in charge.
I have no idea what the hell you're doing.
Right.
Right.
But then you hit 18 and you're like, well, the state says I'm an adult and I should be one. And then all of a sudden you get smacked in the face with whatever your next obstacle is.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh,
Mom, Dad,
that sucks.
Yeah, that was harder than I thought.
But then we start doing this mental frame of mind where you're like, well, maybe I'm just going to do something different. And that kind of like takes over your whole persona.
It does.
And you get into, well, I have a new job and I, you know, maybe I'm going to go to college and, well, I'm going to listen to something new now. I'm going to branch out.
Right.
But this is when we had Media Play and we had a whole bunch of Sam Goody's and Suncoast and, you know.
The good old days.
Right, right.
Right. And we did. We got to go in and peruse and browse.
Mm-hmm. And listen.
Yeah, and listen, which was a big deal. And now, you know, kids have a lot of kids. Oh my God, I'm 90. people have a lot of options now with music. You know, if you can turn on an iPhone, you can produce an album at this point, basically.
Yeah.
And so we have a lot of great music out there that now has a an opportunity to be heard, but at the same time, there's a lot of really crappy music out there that has the opportunity to be heard.
To be heard, yeah.
And that's what, you know, the kids are having a hard time being able to streamline, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I'm a 15 or 16-year-old girl, is Cardi B really what I want
to aspire to? Yeah.
Right. But then I say that, and we just talked about Little F and Kim, you know? So maybe it's not the worst thing in the world.
Right. But I also wonder, though, too, are they two different messages? Because Lil' Kim was all about, I'm paying my bills, I'm in charge, and Cardi B is kind of like, I'm a bad bitch, but...
Right, but I used to dance.
Right.
But so did Kim, though. I
mean, right.
She did, if you remember, in her earlier stuff, talked more about giving head than anything else.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, she wasn't exactly the feminist empowerment movement that we were hoping for.
Right.
But what she did is allow people to have, you know, feel women to feel a little bit more sexually empowered and not to use it as a weapon, but to be allowed to enjoy it. Where I think Cardi B kind of does that, obviously does that as well.
Right.
I don't know that she is pushing the agenda of I'm making my own money and I really just want to be successful.
Right.
I think she's like, I want these bloody shoes. I want these red bottoms.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it's a more materialistic versus success.
Well, and I think that with Kim, we had actual talent versus I was on Hip Hop and Love or Love and Hip Hop Atlanta or whichever season it was. You know, and we had a lot of, with Kim, you had a lot of, I've seen it, I've been through it, I got your man, you know,
right,
like,
I got him. I gave him back.
Right, and I'm taking him again. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we had a lot of that, and I think, you know, even Nicki Minaj is very much, yeah, I make the money, mm-hmm. and let me show you I make the money, and
shut up while I do it.
Right. And she's very, very much in your face, but I don't know if that's empowerment as much as it is, look what I can do.
Yeah, I don't know. Now that we really chew on it, I'm not entirely sure. I would say, though, that you're right, the talent did lie more
with Kim.
Faith Evans, you know, she had a gospel background, but she could rap a little bit, and she was pretty... I mean, but there were... It wasn't overly produced as it is now.
Right.
They didn't have a, a stencil...
Of what you need to be.
Of what you need to do, be, and
because
say.
They were the stencil.
They made that. You know? They are the cookie for the cutter. And it was like, you know, it was... It's just hard now to listen to some of the female rappers. But what I do hear coming out of hip-hop that I'm really, really loving is having more than one race, you know? Of course, we had Eminem, because we had, you know, somebody had to ruin it.
Right. Hey, I'll have you know I had every album.
Oh, I did, too. But I look back, and I'm like, oh, Lord.
And then I hear my 13-year-old singing it, and I'm like, who the hell are you talking to?
Who gave you that? Sorry, you're not allowed to talk about Slim Shady.
When I was in your age.
But now we've got, you know, we've got mixed rappers, we've got Asian rappers, we've got Arab rappers, we've got it all. And they've always been there, but now they once again have the opportunity to be heard. And I think, you know, other than looking like a fantastic Benetton ad, it's a lot of talent being thrown out there.
Well, you know, one of the cassette singles that we went through was for a 4-year-old named Jordy. And let's see if I can read the 1992.
Ooh, girl.
Jordy was 4, and the name of the single is It's Tough to Be a Baby.
Well, obviously.
Clearly, but he was like 4, because he makes mention of how he's, you know, 4 years old in French. But, like, he has an English and French version on here.
I just turned to count to 4 in French. I'm like, un, deux, trois. Damn it.
I don't know. But, you know, I mean, even then, there's, like, these things that are hit or miss. And I think that's, I kind of mentioned earlier today to somebody that I think that the last episode of June is going to be all about one-hit wonders.
Oh, nice.
And I think we got a lot of those.
Yeah.
Like, we had, what is it? New Kid on the Block, Sound a lot of kids.
Oh, yeah, who is that? I don't know their name.
ALL?
ALF?
ALF? AFO? AUFO? AFI?
I'm still going with ALF. Needs cats and sings and raps. Who is that? That's a terrible band. They talked about Chinese food, and they had frosted tips.
It makes them sick.
It does make them sick.
It wasn't O-Town, but we had O-Town.
Oh, Christ. Oh, cracker.
Yeah.
I mean.
One of the cassette or CDs that I loved was a guy named Scapegoat Wax, and he had this one single, and it was called Hello Allison. It was him being in love with a chick in the convenience store.
All right.
Okay, so I must have sold it to one of our local discount bookstores at some point, and I was looking for it, and I found it online for like $3 on Amazon.
Okay.
I was like, cool, I'm going to order it. Shipping was $3.50.
As much as...
No big deal.
No big deal.
Well, I get it, and it's the promotional disc.
Oh, no.
So, no, no, no.
Was that better?
It was better, because it's labeled promotional, but not only that, it's the one that they would have handed out to the record companies to try and score the actual real distribution.
All right.
So that was pretty cool. But he had the one hit. But I have been playing it nonstop. The van radio broke in November, so I can only listen to Q102 or CD. There's no in between.
That's a heartache. Yes.
And you can't fast forward through anything. You just have to listen to it
from beginning to end. Oh,
so if I want to get to some song on there, I just have to listen.
So it basically is a time warp in
your
car.
Yeah. Yep, along with my cassette player.
I like it. I like it.
Yep.
Well, I was really lucky in my sophomore year in high school. I had a good friend of mine named Krista Markowitz, and her dad, there's a rainbow right there. We're outside, guys. My friend Krista Markowitz was, her dad was a record producer in Nashville. Sure. And he did country music predominantly, clearly because of Nashville. But he also, the production company, also did a record company, I should say, also did other genres as well. So Krista used to come to the front door and help her dad load a box in, and inside that box was nothing but CD singles of, you know, these kids basically just trying to make it.
Right.
And we would just go through and go through and go through and catch it every once in a while. There'd be a great piece in there. And sometimes we'd hear it on the radio 6 months later.
Right.
Most of the time we wouldn't. But it was really cool to have that opportunity.
That's neat.
Yeah. It was super cool. Yeah.
My mom worked in a recording studio I was growing up, right?
Oh.
As the bookkeeper. No big deal.
Well, yeah.
Right.
But she still gets stuff.
So my junior year of high school, I get off the elevator and... you know, Bootsy Collins lives here, right?
Yeah,
so we've got some Parliament connections.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to sit in on George Clinton having a recording session one day.
Whoa.
And in sixth grade, we had to write a speech about the history of fill in the blanks.
Pop.
Yeah. Well, no.
George Clinton. So. Marijuana.
Mine was actually the history of rap.
Okay.
But I started with...
Funk. Yeah.
And I gradually made my way through... And I'm like, you know, this bumbling 16-year-old going, and I was in sixth grade and wrote this report, and I totally talked about you. Can I sit in? And he was like, yeah, whatever. You know, like, he didn't care.
And, you know, he
parted a dread and was like, cool, baby. You know, like, whatever. It was fine. But it was really neat to, like, sit there and watch the recording process. So we got two of them. Oh!
We got a beautiful rainbow,
that's
guys.
That's beautiful.
Happy Pride Month. Yay!
Yay!
Oh, it's gorgeous.
That is really pretty.
It's hard to translate on the old podcast, isn't it?
Yeah. It'd be much more effective than a driving and live-in.
Yeah.
But I probably wouldn't have seen it.
Well, that's pretty cool that you got to listen to that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think not many people get that opportunity.
No. Well, and then, you know, Bootsy himself is local here, and, you know, he gets to do a lot of things around here, and he does a lot of things. He's using it the right way and, you know, getting the charities out there and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But, It was neat to, you know, like, I walked off the elevator. I literally walked off the elevator.
And there he is.
And there he is. And they were recording, like, videotaping it. And the guy that was videotaping it was actually a friend of mine. It was her uncle. So it was like,
oh, cool.
Oh, hey, nice to meet you. And, yeah, hey,
whatever. Bob, how's it going?
Right.
Nice to see you again.
So it was just kind of a neat situation. And I think that there's probably more stories like that out there.
Oh, certainly.
That,
especially in Cincinnati, people we're a little under the radar. And
we're definitely music.
Yeah, I mean, we have, let's not forget that we are the hometown of godforsaken 98 degrees. So, guys.
I went to high school there.
I know you did. I know you did. I apologize. No, that was a great school. But it is a great, is it still going?
It is, but they've moved locations.
Okay.
Yeah. They're down by Music Hall.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Beautiful. It was a great, I remember wanting to be here, and I didn't move here until I was in college, so I kind of missed it.
Yeah.
You know, it's all right.
No,
well, I think, you know, what had happened when we met each other, we were in our early 20s,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
So we were like...
I was like 10. I don't know what you're talking about.
Damn it. blew my cover again.
Again.
I'm terrible at this. What was it, like 21, 22-ish to 24, around that time
Somewhere
frame.
In that age range. Yeah.
Yeah. So we were coming into our own. We had, I mean, for our age, we had decent jobs. Well, okay jobs. they were okay jobs. We had enough money for gas most days.
Yeah. And some Starbucks.
And some Starbucks and some beer on occasion. So
more beer than Starbucks, probably.
More well vodka than we'd like to admit. But we had a lot of that. That's what connected you and I,
right.
is we were able to really click on our music. Mm-hmm. We were able to, I mean, obviously we're hilarious individuals. We're charming. Clearly, and we're gorgeous.
We're magical AF, yeah, man.
We are magical AF. We're mother chucking unicorns over here. But, you know, we were also able to you know, bond on that. And I think we both understood one another, and that even though we had some, you and I would splinter off in different directions with music, there was still the same vein of we really respect and love hip hop.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a big deal.
Yeah.
To find a white girl from the Midwest.
Right. That was into
hip-hop. Like legit hip hop.
Right. That knew what they were talking about. Right. But I think the other group that really got me at that point was Gorillaz.
Oh, God.
Because they were brand new. And I remember going to Media Play on my lunch break because I had an hour.
Yep.
And I would go and I'd come back with like 8 different like CDs. Yep. And I would have Mos Def, Black on Both Sides. I'd had Gorillaz, Demon Days. I had, you know, Finley Quay. I had Tricky. I had all these people. And I would just listen to it as I was inputting, you know, photos into the computer.
Right.
And the home office would, like, message me on my computer, like, what are you doing playing music on this? Like, what are you doing? But, like, in between calls, you would come racing to my desk, like, what are you listening to?
What do you have on?
Let me hear. Let me see.
Do you remember Black Eyed Peas before Fergie?
Yeah.
Okay. That you and I both had, what was that, a cassette or a CD that we would play in the car?
CD.
Okay, yeah, we would play that in the car, and we were like, I like this.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it. And then they changed so very much.
Yeah.
Are there any other bands that made those pivotal changes like that? Because I feel like Black Eyed Peas had, I mean, they had so much potential, they had so much talent, and then
they went Kids Incorporated.
They went Kids Incorporated. They were just about. Yeah. So who else did that? There had to be more than that.
You know, I know there were groups that made this, you know, like, well, we're just going in a different direction.
Well, I mean, Fugees did that too, where they, I mean, they went a little bit more mainstream poppy.
And I feel,
for a minute.
Yeah, I feel like Old DB did that too.
Yeah, thank you.
Because we had Ghetto Superstar from Bullworth? Yeah, and you know, that really kind of ushered in, you know, we had Maya at that time was kind of, it was weird because Aaliyah had just passed, and it was like somebody was looking to fill that void.
Yeah.
And they were all just clawing their way to get there. That's when we got Ciara. That's when we got more Missy. And I don't think Missy was trying to do that.
No, Ciara certainly was just trying to be Maya Light. But
right.
It was, yeah.
But we also got Timbaland and Magoo at that point.
How are we missing out? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, it's okay. I was just going to say we got all these groups that were really not groups, but they merged really well. But we didn't, I know there were people that kind of were like, okay, so we're going to take this part of the group and keep it and piss off to the rest of it.
It's basically like Beyonce from Destiny's
Child. Right. Which, except for it was reversed.
Right,
so.
Exactly. I think there were a couple that did that.
I'm going to look through the ultimate list of music here and see what we've got.
She has a printout here, guys, of her music. Of her. This is CDs or this is cassettes?
This is all CDs.
Okay.
But some of this, I'm like, where the hell do I have it? Alien Ant Farm. That was a good one. That was a one-hit wonder.
It was
a
one-hit wonder, yeah.
I think that, you know, we also saw the beginning of Jason Mraz at that point.
And you're a big Jason Mraz fan.
Huge Jason Mraz. I actually have lyrics tattooed on my person.
Wow.
Yep. Seen him a few times, like 3 or 4.
Wow.
Yeah. I love it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I haven't, that hasn't clicked for me, but I haven't really tried either, if that makes any sense.
No, it does.
I've heard him in passing, and I don't dislike him.
No. He's a good show. Waiting for My Rocket to Come was the first CD that came out in, like, 2001. And it was him, again, doing a very hip-hop feel, but it was acoustic hip-hop.
Right.
So it was him kind of being, like, folksy. He's from Virginia. He kind of just broken through to L.A., and he was trying to explore his story a little bit. And he literally was talking about how this is what the record company wanted, so this is what I'm making.
Right,
and
right.
There's a line that he uses, and he says, I'm the one curly fry in the box with the regulars. And you're like, all right, I get it. Whatever,
yeah, sure. I know what you mean.
But it's kind of this same thing where he obviously grew up with hip-hop in his background.
Mm-hmm.
And I identified with that, but just the way that he orchestrates his words to his music, and he's actually classically trained as well. Mm. There are a few songs where he uses an operatic key and an operatic tone.
Nice.
But it's then you don't know it until you've seen him live to realize that's him. Yeah. But he, you know, we got that. And then we got, Madonna came out with new music at that time. Wow. She came out with Ray of Light.
Yep.
Let's see.
And we were pulling a little bit more house and jungle into mainstream pop music, which was a lot of fun because if you were into that in the 90s, that was kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah. We had, Suzanne Vega. She was there still. Yep. Trying to, again, as I look at this, I'm just trying to figure out where
we're at. What year are we at now? Late 90s,
early 2000s. Okay. We got Squirrel Nut Zippers, which was the ushering back in of New Orleans jazz.
Yeah.
They put on a great show at the very end of the very first show I saw with them. They did a New Orleans funeral procession through the crowd, and they disbanded the entire drum kit and took it around. And
cool.
They threw out the Squirrel Nut candy and the little babies and everything.
That's awesome.
Then you also got, we had a really big insurgence. We had a very big surge of whatever.
Could have been.
Same thing. Of soundtracks.
That was a few years later.
A few years before. We had a lot of soundtracks that came out.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
A lot of soundtracks.
Dangerous Minds, that was a huge one. But don't forget the White Woman Saved the Day, so it's fine.
Whatever. Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yes.
That white gold.
Yeah.
But we also got...
Current reference, guys.
Right. We also got Romeo and Juliet. And we got all the Baz Luhrmann stuff. So we got Moulin Rouge. We got Romeo and Juliet.
Well,
we
let's not overdo Moulin Rouge. There's about 3 decent songs that came out of that. But I will
say... They were on the soundtrack.
On the soundtrack, right. Exactly. Now, Romeo and Juliet, How Dare You, Ma'am. I mean, that was How Dare You. That is my...
Volume 1 and 2 or just the 1?
Volume 1 and 2.
Okay, just checking.
Because, come on.
Because I am a pretty piece of flesh.
Poor Billy is going to hear my wheezing as I laugh. Yes.
We got that. And then for me, I became interested in, my movie changes also changed. So I became interested in German film. So I was really, I know, it was very weird.
I wish you could see my face right now. I'm like, German films is quite specific.
What the hell?
Do you speak German? What's going on?
I do not, actually. I am a fan of watching movies with subtitles regardless of the language. Really, because I'm turning deaf.
Oh, okay.
Like, I'm having a hard time hearing as I get
older.
But
you weren't then.
I wasn't, and it was just something I enjoyed doing. And honestly, one of the very first films that I saw that was a foreign language film was Run, Lola, Run.
Ooh.
And a great film with Frank Potente, and Tom Zweiger was the director. And
I love your accent with that.
Zweiger?
Zweiger. Are we Swedish? Are we German? What's happening?
But it was a great film, and it really, it was very heavy and techno and pumped. And,
yeah.
But the storyline was cool, so I kind of followed her around through different movies.
Sure.
And anybody who isn't familiar with that actress, she was on, she was in the Bourne Identity movies. She's the girl that Matt Damon goes to the beach with.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then she's in Blow. She plays Johnny Depp's girlfriend, Barbara.
How dare she?
How dare she? But we also got to see Broadway shows become movies.
Yeah.
So we got Broadway soundtracks, like Evita came out in 97. And so that was a huge deal because this whole new era of ages were getting acquainted with, because they brought in a safety, which was Madonna.
Right.
And then they were like, oh, but Madonna sings Broadway.
Well, Madonna was, I mean, she had to stretch her vocal cords like nobody's business to make that happen. But you and I, coming from a theater background, I don't think that was as impactful to us as it could. I mean, what that did is like, hey, we're raising the hand and saying we're not as weird as you thought.
Right.
See, look.
It's mainstream now.
It is mainstream now. I know all the words already.
Yeah.
Right. But... It's a big bird that just almost tried to kill us. It's fine, guys.
We're still here.
But I think for the masses who were not theater nerds like us, definitely got to see that there was some potential there. Miss Saigon also was reintroduced around that time.
Rent
started kicking its own ass at that point.
Yep. But then we also got... this is a little bit further out, a little bit past the early 2000s, maybe like... the early knots, if you will. We got Garden State.
Oh God, yeah.
And Garden State ushered in this whole new group of not quite emo and not quite pop, when you had the Shins and you had groups like that that were on the soundtrack, and you know, it's a different feel. because it was Zach Braff does such a great job picking music for his projects, mm-hmm. that he really picked a soundtrack that you didn't have to watch the movie to understand the emotion of the movie.
Sure.
And so we got a lot of influx with, you know, okay, everything's really sad, and then we're kind of happy, and then we're back down again. Right. You know, like we got, and I think to me that was the first time the soundtrack stood alone.
Wow, that's a pretty bold statement.
Yeah.
Say it stood alone. All right, fair enough.
Yeah.
I'll allow it.
Okay. You may pass.
You may pass there. I mean, that's a legitimate statement. That is, but I mean, once again, that wasn't the time that music didn't speak to me that way. I got my emotional connection and my angst out earlier. Mm-hmm. And so that type of music didn't feel it had the technical prowess that was necessary for me to. Now I sound like the most pretentious ass.
No, I get what you're saying.
They're playing three chords on the guitar and, you know, a snare. Yeah, exactly. And I'm like, I can't handle this anymore.
All right, Dave Matthews Band.
Oh, Christ, my crap.
Okay, no, I do have a horrible story about seeing them live.
I just saw them three times, so
Guster opened up for them.
Did they?
I love Guster.
Wow.
They opened up for them and played probably an hour and a half, and then it took DMB about 45 minutes to set up, which is really obnoxious.
Yeah.
And by the time I got to the car, because I gave up on trying to watch it, they were actually playing music.
Oh, Christ.
And I was like, $40 for lawn seats for this, and to have some chick pass out on me in the line behind me at the bathroom, and then the cops thinking she was on drugs and I knew, you know, like, and I got a scar out of it because she scratched me on the way down, you know?
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, it was
lovely.
All beautiful.
So that wasn't...
No hep, so that was...
That wasn't scarring at all, literally.
No, literally, no. Yeah.
Yeah. Dave Matthews Band was a white hat situation. You know, the frat boy loving, easy to digest bull.
But on the same page, we had these frat guys that had a DMB flag right next to a Rage Against the Machine flag.
And you know what? You asked me that question at the beginning of what still electrifies me.
Right.
And, and I would have to say Rage Against the Machine to this day does that. Prodigy is it for you. And now that I really think that electrifies me every time I listen to Rage Against the Machine.
Do you think it's the political motion? Or...
No, I think it's Zach's literal rage.
He's genuinely angry.
He's so angry, and he's so beautiful, and he's so talented, and he's also, he is the music, and the music is him. There is no differential, and I think that is very powerful.
Yeah. No, so, I agree.
I don't, he could be talking about whether he prefers white or chocolate milk, if he sings
he's
it,
he's very passionate about stuff.
And I would be like, "Yes, sir, whatever you say, sir."
Yep. Unfortunately, they were on a tour with Beastie in the early 2000s,
yes.
And then Rage broke up, and they're like, "Sorry, tour,
bye, bye, guys."
Yeah.
Bye, well, that's what happens when you have very, you know, angry rich.
White,
well, he's not white,
he's
but
not,
yeah,
but I
the
mean,
rest,
like...
yeah, entitled little brats that have enough information to be dangerous and enough talent to get a record deal. That's what.
Well, and then you remember one of them climbed the speaker stack at what the MTV
the Grammys
Maze or
maybe.
Something.
Maybe I thought it was the Grammys.
I think you're right. I think it was the Grammys, but
just
it,
was
you know,
wildly inappropriate.
Yeah, and you know, and we haven't even touched on Red Hot Chili Peppers.
I was just gonna go there. When he's wildly inappropriate, I think of Flea's penis
a
on a giant. Yeah. No, there was no sock. It was Woodstock 99. It was just behind the bass. And every once in a while, it would just pop out, and on a Jumbotron, so that was not upsetting at all. They wonder why we burnt it down, okay? That could be it.
Kiss cam?
Okay.
Or...
No. Red Hot Chili Peppers, I think, are terrible. I do.
Really?
I hate them. I cannot... Okay. I don't care for them whatsoever. And I think it's more because they're obnoxious. But then again, I love Sublime, and they are wildly obnoxious.
Oh,
and
I love
311,
Sublime.
And they're wild. Yeah.
Oh, but see, that was you know, that was junior, senior year of high school, where you know, I don't know about you, but I can just picture you rebelling in your Catholic school uniform.
Shut up. How did you know?
It rolled three times.
And if it was on.
And the polo, right. And the polo, like, just kind of barely topped.
No, it was more like I was cutting the polo to make it a deeper V. That's all I had happening at that point. My legs are exactly 3 inches long, so we already had to roll it, Tracy. It was more like hiding pot and, you know, running from the cops. But it was, that's exactly when that was. But granted, it was a very fun time in life, but it was also that music, was a soundtrack of that time. So I think for me, I'll always love them.
But so, yeah.
Not Red Hot Chili Peppers.
No, no. Now, I have told my family that at my funeral I want Badfish played. Now, if you listen to the words, though,
okay,
it's very much, you know, I dive deep, but I'm 10 feet overhead.
And, sure.
You know, he's definitely talking about being high, but he's also...
he's definitely talking about being high, but you can take it a different way.
No, but I mean, you listen because, it, you know, it's talking about how I'm not mad at God, and I, you know, I'm not... Everything's...
Yep.
It is what it is, and I...
You are where you are.
I swim, and I wish I'd never learned, and, you know, it talks about doing things that...
It's heavy shit.
Yeah, and
way to bring down the room, Tracy.
No, I know.
It's cool, man. I'm fine. Wah,
wah. But, you know, I think that Sublime had this, you know, this weird dichotomy, because in one song he'd be talking about date rape.
Yeah.
But then in the very next song he'd talk about his girlfriend with a Kung Fu grip.
So you really
had this weird thing where it was like, no, because this was a big no because she said no and she didn't want it, but over here she's willing to do it.
Right.
So they were very strict in the line that they were drawing. And you know, we had
which was rare then.
Yeah, we had Garden Grove and we had all these different Two Blunts and you know, 40 Ounces of Freedom. The whole CD 40 Ounces of Freedom was
that was a big deal.
Huge CD that really put them on the map. And then unfortunately Bradley Nowell passing away so shortly after their real actual fame hit, I would predict that they would have continued touring with No Doubt.
Mm-hmm.
They would have probably come out ahead of Red Hot.
Certainly.
And certainly would be doing their 40th anniversary tour. You know, I mean, it's, or whatever, you know, it was really tough to see a lot of our artists though, like Shannon Hoon from Blind Melon in the early 90s, we were seeing a lot of, and Kurt Cobain, we were seeing a lot of artists suffering for their art in ways that we weren't really familiar with.
Well, I think that this has always been happening, you know, from Janis Joplin to
Jimi Hendrix and all, you know, Mama Cass, we got all that.
Exactly. And it was just repeating itself, and it's happening now again. Unfortunately, it's most of still our generation.
Right,
still,
I know.
You know, knocking themselves off left and right, but, which I'm highly sensitive to, I'm not making light of suicide, Jesus. I'm just saying, like, we're kind of continuing with that, although we also have, you know, this, people were dying of heroin overdoses and they're still dying of opiate overdoses now, but we also weren't exposed to that, because in the 80s it probably happened, but I can't think of who it would be.
I
can't think of
Sid and Nancy and that's about
well,
it.
Yeah, I mean, that was a given,
right? I think it was probably more less focus on that and more focus on, you know, your mom was on crack rock. I mean, quite honestly, we were focusing on a different drug, because it also focused on a different subculture.
Right.
And
exactly.
I think there was this, this focus over here, and we didn't have that growing up. So we didn't see a lot of that.
We didn't. So that when it did happen, when suicide and drug overdoses were happening and we were old enough to comprehend them, and then it was taking away music that was moved us and helped us kind of come of age or introduced us to something else in life, another emotion or whatever, that was difficult. I remember when I was living in Medina, Ohio, and I was listening to the Buzzard radio station because I would come home from work. Seriously, I come home from school, and it was a little bit before my brother and sister came home because they're much younger, and so I'd have like this 35-minute window of just nobody in the house but me, and I'd crank up the radio, and I would sing and dance.
Yeah.
Because I didn't get enough of that at school.
Right.
It was show tunes at school, though. And I remember they cut into a song and said that they had just found Kurt Cobain dead.
Yeah.
And I remember like sobbing about it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that was a big deal. Now we move on to taking that notion of these angsty, angry, guitar heavy,
very melancholy, grungy Smashing Pumpkins
thing.
Kind of feel. Yeah.
Smashing, very good.
Eddie Vedder. Yeah. I mean,
oh God, God love him. Don't we all just do you love Eddie Vedder?
I think he was very instrumental in bringing a lot of,
no, like, do you want to take his pants off? Love him. Like,
no, he wears too much flannel.
No. So, well then that was a good thing. Now he's
warm.
Yeah. No, he's a little toasty. He actually gets along with the hipsters now. They're all
Does
wearing
he?
It. Yeah. Yeah. The beard, the long hair.
And the Pabst. It's fine.
Exactly. But then we moved on to, you know, we still had the anger, but we pulled a little, like, more metal.
Right.
Deftones, for example.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Whew. Who didn't love Chino and what was happening there?
Oh, yeah.
That was a big deal. That was right in our genre.
Yeah,
that
was Fly in the House of Cards, and you had all that. And
yeah,
then, but then we also got, Corner Shop.
Mm-hmm.
Which was kind of like Deftones' younger brother. It was like, you know, it was just kind of like this,
You know, and then that somehow turned into like Dashboard Confessional. Right. Somehow this evolution occurred.
And AFI, like, which is funny because AFI started off as a ska band,
right?
And then they morphed into emo punk, yeah, right. And it was, you know, it was like the era of Hot Topic, where. I mean, I say that with all love because I literally just told somebody the other day, I buy more things for my kids at Hot Topic now than I do for myself. The tables have turned. You know? Where are we in life? Right. I still have the loyalty program, but... Oh,
God.
I'm getting my Hot Topic cash, damn it.
Yeah, I'm getting it and I'm spending it.
You know, but when you start buying Yo Gabba Gabba things at Hot Topic,
yeah, that's a little
it's time to turn it over.
Time to turn it over. It was, though. I mean, we looked at a turn there in the mm-hmm. early 2000s and... You know, going into the teens,
right?
Of this kind of emo, I called it like wine music,
wine core,
like, yeah, wine core. I like
is,
it.
Which,
yeah.
by the way, is not a group of moms.
It could be.
It's I not think a squad goal.
Challenge accepted, because that is my new one. And I just other than Dashboard, which I can handle a couple, like yeah. you know, songs
well, we got Yellow Card and oh, all that God, kind of crap yeah. out of it too.
Yeah, I mean, in Yellow Card, they're fine, but right. I just don't feel like they had any, they didn't hold any girth right. in my life.
Well, and we also got movies like School of Rock.
Oh, yeah.
That, you know, you're not hardcore unless you live hardcore.
Right.
Which has been going through my head all day.
Nice.
I saw somebody quote, you're tacky and I hate you. I was like, now I have to watch it again.
And my kids love that movie.
Yeah.
They love it.
It's great. And that's the thing, too, is we were getting these more family-friendly music-style mm-hmm. movies that weren't... The Mouse, and they weren't
the Crow,
Dreamworks.
That was totally different, but I had to throw it in.
But they weren't, you know, they weren't these cartoonized,
right?
Merry Melodies kind of feel.
Right.
They were actual people with actual plight and
actual talent.
Solving. Yeah, yeah. yeah. And we got our first taste of Jack Black.
Come on.
Aside from Tenacious D,
still is one of my top 20.
They're so
fun. They're fantastic.
Yeah. yeah.
But yeah, so we have clearly gone a little off topic, and
we're still music. You
know, we're still music. Let's go back to. I'm going to look through Tracy's cassette collection here, and I'm going to ask her about some of these.
Okay,
ladies and gentlemen, wow,
they are varied. We range from Simpsons Sing the Blues to
oh God, she really
a
does
4-year-old
have it.
Saying that it's hard to be a baby.
It is hard to be a baby. All right, so here's we've got Crisscross. Mm-hmm. Who remembers Crisscross?
Always.
Like I told
the
you,
the first
earlier.
Album,
the first
totally crossed out.
Yeah,
they actually had two.
I'm very upset that you know this, but go ahead.
So Totally Crossed Out was, I was the same age as these guys,
mm-hmm.
you know, same
yeah.
thing. Right?
I saw them at the fair.
Right. Yeah. yeah. So, I was impressed with kids my age doing something.
Yeah.
I think that's why I really liked Another Bad Creation too, is because they were kids doing something.
Right.
And they were kids showing me that, hey, you're my age,
it.
You can do it, you know, and
you're
it wasn't.
You're going to make it.
Right. And thanks for letting me down, but, but, you know. Like, for me, I wore, again, it goes back to my clothing style. I wore the big Bulls jerseys, and I wore the big brim caps with the tags still on, and, you know,
can't
like...
can't believe your mother let you out of the house.
It was with much arguing.
Oh, I'm sure.
Although, who do you think bought me the stuff?
So. Oh, that's true, yeah.
But it was, you know, I was in this, I didn't wear my pants in the back, because, right. you know, who can pee that way? But it was...
That
it was
so
it's
valid,
right?
Yeah.
But I was intrigued by these kids writing songs about, you know, I missed the bus.
Yeah.
Or, you know, this is a nightmare. You know, my nightmare isn't being chased. It's, you know, my friend died because they got shot.
Right.
Or, you know, we had this really weird...
mix.
Yeah, this mix that you wouldn't normally hear on an adult rap album.
Sure.
But you were getting it on this one. Or
right.
talking about, hey man, that honey's fly. You know, like we were getting that, like the youngsters had a song called Honeycomb.
Oh,
Honeycomb
yeah.
Hideout. And it was all about where the girls hang out after school. And you know, I mean, it was the same thing. It
yeah.
was just relatable. And,
it was.
And I think I really enjoyed listening to somebody talking about, yeah, my mom and my dad are picking on me, or, you know,
right.
like the first intro to ABC at the playground is the parents talking about their kids,
right.
but it's obviously been recorded over the telephone for most of them, so
yeah.
that, because that was how we did things
yep.
in the early 90s.
That is how we did
so
things.
So Crisscross to me holds a huge place in my heart, not only because, you know, that, you know, they're the miggity, miggity, miggity back daddies.
Well, clearly.
But... also because it embarrasses my kids when I play this stuff and I can spit the lyrics.
Isn't that an amazing turn of events in life?
Yes.
It's like, you know, when something like this comes on and you can, you know.
You can go for it. Well, and you know, I really did want to be a female MC in the early 90s. Yeah. And there was a point where I really thought I was doing it. I really thought I was going to do it.
Yeah.
And I really thought that I had it down. And then I kind of abandoned it because I was like, no. Stop.
Well, you know what? But we just did. You weren't in a place that supported that enough.
Right.
And I mean, I think you would have been great at it. But I also think it had been very hard as a white Midwestern girl, you know,
to be taken seriously.
I mean, Eminem,
look at MC Snow.
Yeah. Look at MC Snow.
Ooh. I mean,
you know, we've got a couple of decent white rappers out there, and there's. There are quite a few really great rappers.
Right.
But very few white women.
Specifically. I mean, you have Lady Sov, but she's, you know, not U.S. born.
No, and that was a different dynamic in the U.K. where she was able to kind of...
pile into that,
Oh, my God, what was that band I like? Original Pirate Material.
Oh.
You know who I'm talking about? The Streets.
Yeah.
Who knows The Streets? I can't believe you know this. Well, of course, I can believe you know The Streets. Yeah. But I love them.
Oh,
are we going past
the pen? The maximum recording time for a segment is 60 minutes.
Well, we better wrap this crap up.
Better. All right. Better. You got one more?
I have Erykah Badu right here, and I see Janet Jackson's single to If.
Uh-huh.
If you had to, if there was a fire,
uh-huh.
Which one are you picking?
I'm saving If because the hand thing. No, because I have Badu on CD.
All right, good enough.
I'm always gonna save my cassette singles, but it's also fair. They're always in the same box. If you had one CD out of your collection that you could only listen to for the rest of time,
oh my God!
I know. Come on, we only got 5 minutes.
Oh my God! I'm gonna need 5 hours of the rest of time. The Choir Girl Hotel by Tori Amos.
Okay.
Yep. And you?
It's a toss-up between Digable Planets, Reachin', and then I'm going to have to say Two Skinny J's Supermercado.
Really?
Yeah, I really am.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
Wow.
I know. I'm a big skinny fan.
Okay.
I'm a skinny soldier. What can I say?
I'm a skinny soldier. I might have to say that other than Tori, Enema by Tool.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's enough to... spark the interest.
And Enema's enough to spark everything.
Spark the passion within me.
We're calling it passion now.
Well, that was so fun. Thank you for having me today.
Thank you for doing this. I appreciate it.
I'm going to be touching all of your cassette tapes and rubbing
just
them on
don't
me.
Don't lick them.
Oh, fine.
I know. Giving I take all the fun out of everything.
All the time. Tracy,
I know.
Jesus.
I know. Guys, thanks again for tuning into the hashtag Fish Life podcast. Tell us what you think. We'd love to hear it. I also would like to know if you'd like to hear more of other people and not just me.
Because I'll talk whenever you want me to.
Yeah, and I'm going to have you whenever I can. Because November is all about... November has a National Adoption Day.
Oh, yeah.
In it.
I'm an adoptive mama.
Right, and I am an adoptee. Mm-hmm. So, another thing that's really cool is one of my biological sisters will be here for my week of my birthday, and she's going to do a podcast with me, too.
That'll be great.
So, make sure you stay tuned for the next 2 weeks in June where we tackle, next week, Alex and I will be talking about emotion and music and how it affects you. And then the final week of June is going to be all about one-hit wonders and how many do you have in your collection. Thanks for listening on Anchor FM, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere that you can find these podcasts. Have a good night. Make sure you put a smile on your face and put a smile on somebody else's face because you really never know when they'll need it. Bye, guys.